Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. We're going to be talking with Tammy Flanagan. She's probably the world's leading authority on all things to do with federal retirement and many of the other benefits as well. So glad to have you with us. And Tammy herself is practicing what she preaches. Tammy, you're sort of into phased retirement, aren't you?
I am. I've heard about the government employees at some point going to get to do phased retirement. So I thought I'd get a jump start and start that myself with my husband's retirement this year. So I'm trying to ease back, but it seems like I've been busier than ever. So I'm not sure if that's really working.
I know you have because I saw your schedule for today and we're your first stop. And
that's
you're
right.
doing a lot of appearances. So appreciate you coming in and all. And I thought that was touching the other day when you said, you talked about you had retired and your husband had retired and you're splitting time between Northern Virginia and Florida, but you said your husband was the guy you knew in high school.
That's
had
right.
become the guy you knew in high
yeah.
school.
Yeah. Whenever he retired in January, it was like he just this burden lifted, I think, from getting up at 5 a.m. and having to fight the traffic into D.C. So I think just getting rid of that daily schedule and just getting up and getting to do what he wants, it really did bring this sense of peace about him, and he does seem to laugh more. We even caught a picture of him laughing, and he says, well, it's because I wasn't posing.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't ready. Well, listen, we got some interesting questions today, but I credit you with, you say it was me, but I'm sure it was you with the best date to retire.
It was a figuring joint
out,
effort.
Yeah, figuring out what's the best date to retire, and many people think of one date in December or another date in January, but in fact, and you've written in your government executive column numerous times about the best date or dates to retire and how they're staggered through the year, and it depends on what you want out of life. I mean, if you want to go on a cruise down the Rhine in August, then retire in July.
Exactly.
But if you want to do certain other things, but here's a question, an email question from Marie. Sounds simple. I'm glad you're here. I'm retiring this year. I am in FERS. What's the best date, September 30th or December 31 or any other date? Now, interesting that she'd pick September 30th.
I know.
Maybe you know.
I thought it was, too. I wonder what was with that. Maybe it was because she wants to retire while the weather's still nice,
yeah,
perhaps, if she's around here. But I thought it's a short question, but it's interesting because the first thing she said was, I am retiring this year.
So, yeah, that's
so
a done
she's
deal.
Made up her mind.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first and foremost. Are you mentally ready, financially ready? Apparently, Marie is.
Mm-hmm,
she's decided this is the year. And a lot of people ask that. They'll say, well, how do you know? And I've heard people say they just wake up one day and they say, you know what? This is the time. This is the year. So she made that decision. So now she's looking at the calendar. She says, should I get out of here before the holidays start when the weather's still nice, or should I wait till the midst of everything in December? And we've talked about this for years, Mike, that at the end of the year, what motivates or what drives people to retire at the end of the year is usually accumulation of annual leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about that year after year, and it's no different this year than any other year. Federal employees can carry over, you know, usually 240 into the new year. And if they're going to retire that year, like she's planning now, it's only May, but she knows she's going to retire the end of the year. You know, if she saves up her leave, if she doesn't take any leave, which again, you know, maybe you need a vacation, but if you can save it up, you could potentially save up 208 hours during a 26 leave period year. And that's another 208 hours. So if you had all of that, if that was your motivation to maximize that lump sum payout of annual leave, then I would say retire December 31st under FERS, because that's going to accumulate 200 of the 208 plus whatever she carried into this year, and you'll get paid for that in 2016, which taxable in 2016. And if there are two people in Congress who want to give federal employees a 3.4% pay increase, if for some reason they did, that leave would be mostly paid out at the new pay rate. So whether it's 1% pay increase or 3.4, you would get most of that annual leave paid out at the new rate. So for those reasons, I would say December 31st.
And when you're talking about the 240 maximum carryover, plus if you take no annual leave that year, you'd get another 208. And people say, well, that's not much. Look at your hourly pay rate.
Absolutely.
You know, I think there's some website which shows the hourly pay rates.
Well, all you got to do, and I'll do it real quick. All you got to do is take your annual pay rate and you divide it by 2087. So if I had, let's say our annual pay rate happened to be $65,000 a year. If I divide that by 2087 hours, my hourly rate's $31 an hour. And if I had 440 hours of leave, that would be a payout of $13,700 before taxes. So
yeah,
don't get too
nice,
excited, because after taxes, you might have $6,000
left. Yeah, you could buy a Yugo with that.
That's right.
Well, that's good. Okay.
So but it really does tide you over. It gives you a cushion while you wait.
Sure.
For the first check to come.
Right. That's a good point. And it also maybe prevents you from having to tap your TSP long before you want to. You know, that should be a luxury item rather than
exactly.
an emergency thing.
Exactly.
Okay. Good question from Marie. Good first question. Mm-hmm. Here's one, and Althea. My question is, how does CSRS offset fit into the scheme of things? I somewhat understand the principle, but would it be better to retire at 55 and 30 years of service, or stretch it to the maximum CSRS benefits? Mm-hmm. And what is the best date to retire? I think probably most people don't really know what CSRS offset is.
They may have heard of it, but they're like, what is that? Well, first of all, normally how people get into CSRS offset is they were folks who had federal service. I could use myself as an example. I worked in the government back in the 80s, and I had 8 years of service. So I had more than 5 years, meaning I was vested. I was entitled to stay CSRS. But I left. So I've been gone now for whatever, 28 years. Mm-hmm. If I were to get rehired, if I came back into federal service, I wouldn't go directly into FERS. My agency would have to give me civil service coverage, but they'd also have to deduct Social Security from my paycheck. So I'm kind of a hybrid. I'd be a hybrid mm-hmm. between CSRS and FERS. But I would not get matching thrift, but I would get the more generous civil service calculation that would be later offset or reduced by Social Security. So it's kind of a modified version of the old civil service system. So Althea is saying, well, should I just go out when I'm first eligible? You know, maybe mm-hmm. I have 30 years at 55 when you could retire. But at that point, you're only going to get 56% of your high three.
Yeah.
So if you can live on half of your pay, you know, well, then go for it. But on the other hand, if you want a more generous retirement income, you want a little bit more money to fall back on, a little bit more replacement of your salary, then every year that you work, every month that you work, that benefit's going to go up. And so she said, would it be better to maximize civil service? Well, that would be work another 12 years and get 80%.
Yeah.
So it depends really how much do you need. Yeah. Do you need to replace just half of your income and you could live quite nicely and enjoy your retirement 7 more years? Or do you want more money to do the things you want to do and maybe work a few more years? So you really have to do the financial planning mm-hmm. to answer that question.
You know,
it really has nothing to do with being offset.
Okay. it's funny, too, in retirement, especially in the federal government, the grass is always greener. CSRS people think that FERS types have it made because they get Social Security, they pay less for their annuity, and they get the 5% government match. FERS people think CSRS people have it made because they get a larger civil service annuity and they don't have to pay into Social Security except for the Medicare part. And most people miss the CSRS offset, but I have personally known two people who did just what you said. They left government intentionally for 1 year mm-hmm. and then came back. So they came back from CSRS to CSRS offset, and they say that's the best of all worlds.
It is, because you maximize your Social Security, which has some tax benefits and some spousal benefits, yet you're not really jeopardizing the civil service calculation. So you're right. You get the benefit of the more generous civil service benefit, and yet you're still including Social Security as part of your retirement, which can be, I know a lot of people discount Social Security, but it can be a good source of income and a little bit tax advantage.
Right,
well.
And like the civil service benefit, it is fully indexed to inflation.
Right,
too. So
it's
you
lifetime.
Got, you're double dipping quite legally.
Yeah, for people with long lives, that's a good combination.
Yeah, okay, here's for you, Geraldine. Let's say the end of the calendar year is January 5th, 2016. I think she must mean the end of the leave year. But instead of retiring on January 5th, 2016, if I had 240 hours, 6 weeks of saved annual leave, would it make sense if I retired 6 weeks into 2016 by taking the saved annual leave instead of a lump sum payment? The reason for my working into 2016 is so I would have earned income in 2016 so that I can contribute to an IRA in 2016.
Okay.
what would be the advantage and disadvantage of retiring on January 5? Again, she says end of calendar year here, but I think she means leave year.
And that's not even the end.
That's not even that. Okay. So some date, early January, and taking a lump sum payment for annual leave versus taking my annual leave in 2016 and retiring sometime in February 2016.
Well, believe it or not, I understand that question.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. I'm leaving the room.
I think I know what she wants to know, even though it's a little bit a roundabout way of getting to it. Okay, so first of all, she's looking at the end of this year, which, of course, the end of the calendar year would be December 31st, 2015.
Right.
And the end of the leave year this year is actually January 9th, 2016. So one of her questions was, should I retire January 9th or even December 31st, and instead of getting paid for my leave, just go on leave? So she really wouldn't be retiring. She'd just be extending her service and retiring when the leave is gone. So maybe she'd be retiring sometime in March, you know, using up all of that saved leave. Well, first problem with that strategy is that your agency could deny you leave like that, because that would be called terminal leave, which means, you know, you'd be intentionally using up your leave and retiring when it's gone. And federal employees are supposed to get paid for their leave, because otherwise, while you're using up the leave, they can't replace you and the work is being held up. And so technically, that could be a leave request that would
and
be
a legitimate one, too. Yeah.
So that right off the bat, you might not be able to do it. But even if you could, you may or may not want to, because getting that lump sum payment for annual leave rather than getting it stretched out as a paycheck, you're going to have a lot more withheld from it. You're going to have health insurance premiums and life insurance premiums and TSP, of course, TSP would be a good thing because you want to contribute to that, but retirement contributions as well. Now, when you get paid for it as a lump sum, you're going to pay tax on it, but you won't have
the
FERS or CSRS deducted. You won't have insurance deducted from it. So it's a little bit bigger check as a lump sum. Plus, as we said a minute ago, you get that lump sum cushion to tide you over while you're waiting to decide what to do with my TSP and what to do with Social Security and what to do with or waiting for OPM to finalize my retirement. So many people love that lump sum payment as opposed to stretching it out and getting paid a salary. So I think that in her case, I'd probably stick with either. I'm not sure, did she say if she was CSRS or FERS, but if she's CSRS, I'd probably go January 1st, actually the holiday of 2016, because that's a Friday, it's a paid holiday, and there's no need to go the second or third, which would be Saturday or Sunday. And if she's first, I'd leave it at December 31st. And if she only has 10 years of service, I'd probably wait till January 9th, because her retirement's not going to be that big anyway. But those would be the dates I would look at the end of this year.
So normally it's like January the 3rd, but coming up in next year, 2016, it will be January the 1st is the better day.
Yeah, because you know you don't get any retirement benefits for the 2nd and 3rd of January. And the only thing you're going to gain by making the effective date the 3rd is two more days of service, which you probably don't need, because there's always a few days left over at the end of your career. So for most people, under CSRS or CSRS offset, that'd probably make it January 1st if you were trying to maximize that leave payment and get paid for the maximum leave. Oh, the other thing she was saying, can I contribute to an IRA? Well, keep in mind that annual leave check will be paid to you in 2016. So that is earned income that would allow you to contribute to an IRA.
Okay, not the TSP,
but
an IRA.
Could make an
okay,
IRA
producer Lauren Larson's giving us the hook here. Need to take a short break on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Tammy Flanagan with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, columnist for Government Executive Magazine, and also a phased retiree, living part-time in Northern Virginia, part-time in Florida. And, you know, so many people who've retired, and I know them and I believe them, say what you said, that I don't know how I had time to do all the stuff I need to do. That you're in some ways you're happier, but you're very, very busy in retirement.
But there's just a little bit more time to enjoy the things that you do. Otherwise, when you're working, it's like, okay, I can go out to dinner Saturday night and I got to hurry up and do it because I got to do laundry when I get home.
Yeah.
Now you can go out to dinner. If you sit there for 3 hours, it's not like you really have to get up in the morning to go somewhere else. So I think it's just taking the time to enjoy some of the things that you enjoyed before, but you can just relax and do it at a more leisurely pace. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Like the song, Little Things Mean a Lot.
That's right. That's right.
A friend of mine's boyfriend, she's telling me all this. I haven't talked to him, but he recently left the private sector and he moved into the government, joined the Commerce Department.
Thank you.
And she said he loves it. He loves what he's doing. It's kind of investigative work. So it's very interesting. But he's just been bowled over by the benefits package. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that a lot of federal workers, maybe if that's been their career, wouldn't understand, because the belief is it's always better in the private sector. You know, you get to country club membership and a leased car and bonuses and all that. Not really.
Well, not always.
But they don't get it.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy over the weekend. We were having a picnic at somebody's house, and I met this guy who does work in the private sector, and he did feel that way. I mean, he was saying, oh, I wouldn't work for the government because mm-hmm. I got stock options and my retirement's taken care of. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's great. You know, all your retirement's based on investing. But what happens, you know, we're on this climb with the stock market and there's going to be a correction at some point. So I wonder if that happened, like mm-hmm. I talked to him when it dropped down 30 or 40%, if he would feel the same way. Where with federal employees, there is part of the retirement, which is the thrift, that is based on investing. And
yeah.
It can have a bad day as well as a good day. But you still have that basic pension and you still have Social Security, which, believe it or not, is still there.
Right. Indexed inflation.
Yeah. And so between those two benefits, that for many retirees is enough to pay your living expenses. So you won't go hungry even if the stock market fell, you know, mm-hmm. 40%. You could still have your basic needs met. And to me, that's a sense of security for a lot of federal retirees that people in private industry might feel a little more uncertain about.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and also they can end the pension plan.
That's right.
They've done it. The Washington Post did it recently for new employees, and they stopped it for current employees. I mean, presumably they'll pay off what's due, mm-hmm. but it can happen.
Lump sum,
it can happen.
And
a number of firms either dropped 401k plans for their employees, or many of them dropped any matching contributions they were making, and the government keeps paying in.
I was
going
to say that there's not necessarily a guarantee that the government at some point in time won't drop the pension plan
right.
either. It's already been talked about, but the government, when they do make major changes like that, many cases it's been grandfathered in, and we
yeah.
would hope, listen, Congress,
yeah.
we hope that you would grandfather in a massive change like that if you were going to make it. So that
yeah.
would be the hope.
Yeah, well, it's got a Lauren Larson just handed me one here from Anne from the National Cancer Institute. She's a 35-year Fed with lots of sick leave. What happens to it when I retire? Good question.
Good question. Yeah, so sick leave. FERS employees hopefully know this by now, but maybe they don't. In 2009, the law changed to allow FERS employees, the same as CSRS employees, to get credit for their unused sick leave when they move into retirement. So what that means is that the sick leave hours, like if you have 1,000 hours of sick leave, that's about 6 months worth. So if you have that, you would add 6 additional months onto your calculation of your retirement. So under the old system, under civil service, every year of service is worth 2% of your high three. So if you had a half a year, that would be another 1% added on. So if I used a high three of $65,000, that would be $650 a year added to your total retirement benefit. Now, FERS employees get the same basic concept. You get the same credit converted, you know, hours converted to months of service. But under FERS, the calculation is either going to be 1% or 1.1%, depending on your age and service at retirement. So the same thing, if you had 6 months of sick leave under FERS and your high three was $65,000, 1 year of sick leave would add $650 or 1%. And a half a year would add $325, which doesn't sound like much, but hey, it's $30 a month.
It's more, and then it's compounding
right.
with COLAs, cost of living
right.
adjustments.
But here's the twist. On the other hand, let's say that you were sick.
Yeah.
Let's say you're retiring because your health is poor, and you had a valid reason to use that 6 months mm-hmm. of sick leave and then retire when it's gone.
Uh-huh.
I would
Do
say
that.
Go ahead and use your sick leave, because you're going to get your full salary for 6 months. You'll still get the 6 months credit added to your retirement, and you're going to earn more leave while you're using it. And there's nothing wrong with doing that if you're really sick.
Right.
But I mean, don't tell your supervisor, I just don't feel
yeah.
like coming to work. That's
yeah.
not
that's
the
not,
same
not
as being
not a good
sick.
Idea. Well, I remember back at the Washington Post, we used to have a feature where we'd run people who had 1,000 hours of sick leave, 2,000 hours of sick leave, and there were huge numbers that that had that much leave stored up. 2,000 would be a year of extra service. Yep. And there were some people who had never taken sick. You know, you're always getting, you know, old Mr. Anderson at the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, he's 89 years old, never had a sick day. So it does happen.
Well, you used to write about, remember Millie Parsons from the FBI? Every single year you used to write about her anniversary, because her claim to fame was she never took an hour of sick leave. And she worked where I used to work at the FBI, so I always loved to hear about Millie and the honor you gave her by writing about her. But she finally did retire at age 88 with almost 63 years of service, and she had close to 3 years saved up. So that was probably close to the record, if not the record. And what I did after she retired is I kept watching the obituaries, because I thought, well, gee whiz, she was 88, so how long did she get to enjoy her retirement?
Yeah.
She was 99 when she died.
Good for me.
So 11 years.
I think I once asked her what vitamins she took.
Yeah.
She didn't quite get it.
Well, people always think, didn't she have children? She must not have had children. That's how she could save her sick leave. But she actually had a daughter.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She is with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, writes a column for Government Executive Magazine, and is probably knows more about the federal retirement system and the attendant benefits packages than anybody on the planet Earth. I love having her on the show. We always get a lot of response, and I can just leave the room and come back in an hour. I was talking with our producer, Lauren Larson, a moment ago, and she said she's going to try to get the show posted, archived, right after we go off the air. So if you want to hear it again, if you want to pass it on to a friend, or you want to listen to it a month from now, this is a very useful show. We had some really, really good questions. The four we got were just really covered the waterfront. I wanted to ask you about this. It seems to be everybody at some point or other is intrigued with the best date to retire, and it means something different for different people. And, you know, we were talking earlier in the show, maybe you want to, you know, go on a European vacation or fly to the Orient or something, so you go in the summertime. There are others who wait till the end of the year or the beginning of the year. December and January, I guess, are the two most popular months to retire, for obvious reasons in some cases. But what's the criteria?
Yeah, so the first thing you have to start with is your basic pension benefit, because if you want to keep your health insurance and your life insurance and you want to have that steady government pension, you should build everything around either becoming eligible for CSRS or FERS. That's why we always talk about the best date for your FERS or CSRS retirement. Now, if you are a FERS employee who's retiring, then you're also going to be thinking about, perhaps, if you're old enough, Social Security, because that's a benefit that FERS employees have paid into, and your TSP. So you might need to start drawing income from your TSP. So those things would come after. They kind of follow. And on the other hand, too, we have a lot of employees like law enforcement officers and some federal employees who retired even younger ages, or people who take an early out at age 50 or 52, they retire. So in some cases, those employees are retiring to another job. So their date is driven by when's the start date of the next job. But for those in the middle, those just normal full career federal employees who have worked 30, 35, sometimes 40 years in government service, they're trying to pick that sweet spot, that best date. You know, they've worked all these years. I don't want to mess up the date I retire. So I think the basic thing to know is that whether you're CSRS or FERS, you can retire any day you want. You can decide that after listening to this show, today is the date.
Yeah.
You know, I learned enough already. I'm going to retire, close the business, whatever it is, May, was it 27th, 8th?
Yeah.
Today, I could retire today. But if you retire today, if you're eligible and you actually pick today, your retirement's not going to start till June 1st. So therefore, you're going to lose, let me look at my May calendar here. So today is Wednesday, so you would lose 2 days of salary. You'd lose Thursday and Friday. So you may as well just wait till May 31st and retire the last day of the month. That way your last paycheck will pay you for all of the days that you would have worked in May, and you would get your first retirement check for the month of June, and it would be dated July 1st. Just like in your salary, you get paid 2 weeks behind, your retirement check is going to be a month behind. So the check you get on July 1st would be the month of June. The check you get on August 1st would be the month of July. And OPM generally does not pay partial months. The only exception to that would be if you went out on a disability or a forced retirement, like a mandatory separation. Only in those cases would your retirement begin the day after you leave. But for most federal employees, your retirement starts the first day of the month after you retire. But like you and I have talked about, Mike, over the years, the old system, civil service retirement, always had that three-day grace period.
Yeah.
And that says you can retire the first, second, or third day of the month and still get the advantage of your retirement starting the next day. So because of that, you can look at months like, let's say, the end of October or September this year. Let's look at September. September 30th of 2015 is a Wednesday. And October 1st and 2nd is not only the end of the week, but it's the end of a two-week leave period. So if you were CSRS, I'd probably pick October 2nd over September 30th. So not only would I get two more days of salary, but I would have finished the two-week leave period and earned my last leave accrual. So I could get paid for an extra 8 hours of annual leave that I wouldn't have accrued if I had left on Wednesday. So the end of the leave period and the end of the month is nice. And if you're CSRS, sometimes the first 3 days of the month will get you to the end of the week.
So you know, everything we're talking about today reminds me of a song. This is What a Difference a Day Makes.
That's right.
Hey, I'm looking at your government executive column of June of 2014 mm-hmm. when you did the best day.
Which reminds me, I got to do a new one.
It's
almost June 2015.
And it does change. These are the best dates to retire in 2015. And let me pick up mid-year here mm-hmm. and specific ones because I think this is kind of thing that unless somebody really ran the numbers and really knew the system, they wouldn't have a clue about this. The next one coming up would be Saturday, May 30th. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah, only because it's the end of a leave period. And May 31st, May 30th really doesn't make too much of a difference because mm-hmm. it's a weekend. And it's the end of a month for everybody. And it's the end of a leave period for most all federal employees. And even if you're FERS, you don't have to worry about that 3 day grace period because you're already at the end of the week anyway. So if you're trying to split the year and if you talk to Bob Lyons about mm-hmm. taxes,
yeah,
he would give you some tax reasons why mid year retirements could make sense. You can max out your TSP by the middle of the year.
Uh-huh.
I only have 6 months of retired pay, 6 months of salary or 5 months. So for tax reasons, it can ease you into retirement and not give you that big change in taxes. Mid-year is not bad.
Okay. And then looking ahead, Friday, July 31st, Monday, August 31st, Wednesday, September 30th, Saturday, October 31st, Monday, November 30th, and Thursday, December 31st. I'm getting a pattern
here.
There's
a common theme.
The last day of the year.
The last day of the month. Yeah, the last day of every month is always good for FERS employees.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you went on and read about civil service employees, there are some months where, like I said, with the end of September, where October 2nd actually would be better if you were CSRS because of that three-day grace period. So I would always say, when I teach this in class, I'll say always look at the end of the month, whatever mm-hmm. month you're thinking about,
yeah.
whether it's February or October, always look at the end of the month. So you can get paid your salary and your retirement starts next month. If you're CSRS, look at the first 3 days of the month because it might get you to the end of the week and you can still get a retirement check for the remainder of that month, even if you go out, the first 3 days. And if you're all about maximizing that lump sum leave check, then we'll look at the end of the year. If you're not all about saving up leave, then the end of the year is not going to be anything more special than
yeah.
the end of September, like the one lady had asked about before. So, that's my first question. Are you trying to save up your leave and cash out the maximum?
Well, when you mentioned Bob Lyons, I automatically think of taxes.
That's right.
Bob with the National Institutes of Transition Planning. But I know one of the advantages of retiring December 31st or January 1st, 2nd, or 3rd is that your lump sum annual leave is paid in that next year. And as you pointed out earlier, most of it, if there is a pay raise in effect, most of it will be paid at this higher rate, whether it's 1% or 3%, every little bit helps.
Right.
The other thing, as Bob would quickly point out, is your income tax liability in the year you're retired is probably going to be lower than it was the year before because you'll be getting retired pay. So you get that lump sum payment, it's slightly higher than it would have been the previous year, and yet it'll be taxed at a lower rate.
Yeah, but there's a little caution there that we're mm-hmm. starting to notice because now we see a lot of people who are close to retirement who are maxing out their thrift. And if you said to me, I'm maxing out my TSP account this year, that means you're putting in $18,000 in your employee contributions. Plus, if you're over 50, you're putting in possibly another $6,000 in catch-up contributions. So that's $24,000 off the top of your taxable income. And then also, don't forget, your health insurance is not taxed. So if you're now reducing your taxable income by maybe in some cases 20%, you might be surprised to find out that your tax situation next year in retirement may not be too much different than it is this year. So there is some real tax planning involved with retirement planning these days, because employees get a lot of tax breaks with the TSP, with health insurance, with flexible spending account that retirees don't get anymore. So you can't contribute to a TSP in retirement. You don't get the tax break on your health insurance. So you might find that your tax rate
is the same.
It could roughly be the same. So unless you're going to retire with, you know, 30 years of service and only half of your salary, then it could go down.
Well, if your taxes are high, your income's high.
That's not a bad thing.
Well, I do this every time, but I refer back to my old friend. He was with the General Services Administration. This goes back 15 years now. Longtime Fed, not an active guy, kind of a couch potato type. His wife was not active or a runner or walker or anything like that. He was from the Midwest, but he lived here a long time. He was going to retire to Washington State. And I asked him, I said, do you have friends there, relatives? No. Obviously, he wasn't a mountain climber or a skier or anything. And I said, how come Washington State? And he had specifically picked a town. And the town was right on the river, right across from Oregon. And so he was going to live in Washington State, which had no state taxes, and shop in Portland or Oregon, which has no sales tax. But that was the reason he moved. And I've mentioned it to some people, and many of them aren't surprised, because the tax situation is paramount for an awful lot of people when they approach retirement. They'll move to some unlikely spot because there is no sales tax or no state tax or something.
I figured you might bring up that story today, because we've talked about it before. So I found this book. I've been using this book for, you know, referring retirees or future retirees to think about the mental preparation for retirement. Just like you said, like, where am I going to live? And moving in retirement is really not a bad thing. It can open up a whole new world of adventure. And maybe this guy was looking for some adventure. So I thought, I'm going to look and see, you know, what is Washington State and what's Oregon look like? And they actually give both of those states a good rating, but it's not even covering taxes. You know, you want to look at the climate, the cost of living, healthcare, transportation, and what there is to do. So if you like mild weather or rainy weather, I guess, too, that might be the place to go. But this book's called The New Retirement, and it's written by Jan Cullinane and Kathy Fitzgerald. The only problem is it hasn't been published since 2007, so you have to buy like the used edition or something now. But it's really a nice guide, state by state, talking about, you know, what should I think about if I'm going to relocate, and which states or even which countries, because a lot of times people want to move out of the country, because we here in the United States, probably even if we're not a high income, are wealthier than 99% of the rest of the world. So some people look at, you know, Central America, like Panama or Costa Rica as good retirement destinations, just because the cost of living is so low.
Large number of American retirees in Mexico, obviously, and many of them concentrated in one town. I think there's 30,000 in one particular town.
Yeah, you'll find these little pockets of expatriates who have moved to different countries that kind of develop this own sense of community.
Short break here, and then we'll pick up the international thing. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tammy Flanagan, columnist for Government Executive Magazine, a guest many times on this show. She appears on the National Institute of Transition Planning's For Your Benefit, which is every Monday, and she is phasing into retirement. Tammy, we're talking about the expats, people who retire overseas, and large number of Americans retire to or return to the Philippines. They work for the government in some capacity, many for the Navy. A lot in Panama, which is many people say is a paradise, a jewel. A number in the Caribbean area. And I remember a few years back, a guy retired from, I think it was I can't remember what agency, but he was in Chicago, and he returned home to his native Latvia, and was elected president. So he was, I think it's Latvia or Lithuania, but he was president of his country, and every month he got an American Civil Service annuity check because he was entitled to that. And a good source of the tax information, by the way, is the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, their magazine, every year, mm-hmm. every April, right? And we highlighted it a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
maybe you should do that again.
Every state, and
it's wonderful.
About,
yeah, it shows you the taxes.
Not just the federal retirements being taxed, but how the state tax structure works in each state, which is, you know, it's important not just to focus on the one part of taxes, but look at the income tax, the sales tax, the property tax.
Well, and there are things too that nobody gets out alive, and they may not have a sales tax, but they may have a substantial property tax or a state tax.
Right.
Or I know, but every time we mention certain states like Florida, I think, and Texas, that don't have a state tax.
Or Alaska. Alaska is the best state tax-wise.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for a tax-friendly state, you can't beat Alaska. They pay you to live there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
they
you
send
have to be that type of person.
Yeah, they send you a check.
Country.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, worry about a caribou on the way home from work.
And you may be willing to see your doctor on a FaceTime rather than in person. Because
yeah, no, I watch that Life Above the Arctic below the Arctic. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I have it. Tammy, somebody's mid-career. They're 40, 45 years old, probably going to stick it out in government. What should they be doing now as far as
retirement? Question. I did a webinar for long-term care partners. You can go to ltcfeds.com and see it. But it was all about mid-career planning. And one of the questions that came up during the webinar was, who uses that term mid-career? Is that really a retirement-related term these days? And I thought about it, and I says, you know what? I think it was a made-up term when FERS was implemented, because we never did mid-career planning under the old system. You planned for retirement 30 days before you walked out the door, because all you had to be is old enough with enough service.
Right.
But with FERS, we're doing not only mid-career planning, but we're doing new employee retirement planning. And that's partly because of the TSP, that you need to start planning early. You need to save consistently and get used to saving for retirement, which is separate from saving for a vacation or saving for college. It's this designated savings fund for nothing but retirement. So we do talk to young employees and mid-career employees about compounding and diversification and volatility, understanding all these investment terms that are important to know, because you want to be able to take some risk to reap the reward of investing. So, you know, risk is not always bad when you're investing. But the other thing with mid-career employees that I like to talk about is your FERS retirement, that basic government pension. It's based on your length of service. So where have you worked? Was all of your service with one agency? Did you ever work for another agency? Did you have a summer job in high school with a post office? Did you serve in the military? So you want to make sure, especially by mid-career time, that all of that service has followed you to your current employer, so that when the time comes to retire, there's documentation showing this is where I worked, this is when I worked there, I was full-time, part-time, intermittent, what type of work schedule did I have? So you need that documentation to prove that you have 36 years of service rather than 27 and a half. And the other thing is, you might find out in the course of documenting all that service that you might not have had retirement deductions withheld, or you might have had a break in service where you withdrew the money. So now you owe money to get the credit for that service. There's something we call a deposit for either military or civilian service. So you need to find out, how much do I owe? You know, if I have to pay some money, how much is it? And the longer you wait to pay it, the more interest it's going to accrue. So you want to find out early if you owe any money in order to count that service. Because under FERS, the basic theory is no payment, no credit. So if it's not covered by FERS, chances are it doesn't count in the calculation of your FERS benefit. So if somebody says you owe some money for something under FERS, I would ask how much and how do
and
I
start
pay
paying it. And can you pay it back monthly?
You can pay it back if it's military service, a little different than civilian. Military, you pay your employer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do payroll deduction, or you could write a check if you just want to pay it off. With civilian deposits, you're paying those, even if you're still working, you're paying those to OPM. So with OPM, you can do it by credit card. You can go to pay.gov and put it on your Visa and earn miles. Or you can pay it, just write a check when you have some money and pay it down over time. Pay it, as long as it's in multiples of $25, they'll take your payment. Or you can do direct deposit out of a bank account, so you'd make a consistent payment, or just pay the thing off. You just write a check and pay it.
Speaking of OPM, how's the retirement backlog coming?
Still a backlog, yes. Yeah. The last I checked, the backlog was running 2 to 3 months for an average retirement claim.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that doesn't mean that some people will retire on May 31st and they'll get their first regular check around the beginning of July.
Yeah.
That does still happen for very clean cases. And if you just happen to hit your claims examiner on a day when they're not busy and you don't have too much work to do. But then there's also, every once in a while, retirement that's still going to take a year because that claim came in, it's got some discrepancies in the documentation or maybe some problem with the court order, the person was divorced. So there's always going to be that one that still takes forever, and there's going to be some that get done, you know, every 2 weeks, you know, they'll pump out a check or every month. But the average case now has taken 60 to 90 days, which means during that time, you'll get a check every month, but it may be a partial check. It may not be the full amount you were expecting to receive, and it might take 2 or 3 months before your claim is, they call it adjudicated or finalized by OPM, and they'll keep you informed.
In a perfect world, that partial check is 80% of the estimate that you're going to get. But, you know, you and I have both had horror stories from people who were getting, I think, as little as 34% of their estimated.
Yeah, if you're a FERS employee, and some of you may know, some of you may not know what the FERS supplement is. But while you're in that interim retirement status, you're not going to get the supplement, which for some people today, that's $1,000 or $1,500 a month. So that supplement's not calculated or determined until they finalize the case. So don't count on that.
Yeah.
And if you have been divorced, and there's even if it's a dollar a month is going to your ex, if OPM sees the divorce decree come, it has to go to the court order section to be reviewed and determined. So they're going to pay you half of your retirement, thinking that maybe half of it's going to your ex until they figure out that she or he is only going to get a buck a month.
You mentioned something that made me think, too, is the ought to tell people about the all-important five-year rule for health insurance.
Yes. Yeah, some of your insurance as federal employees has a requirement that you have to be covered for 5 years before you retire. That's your health benefits, whether it's Blue Cross or Aetna or Kaiser. It doesn't matter which plan you're in, but you have to be in the overall federal employees health benefits program for the 5 years leading up to your retirement. And that could also be partially TRICARE.
You know,
people with military can have TRICARE, jump into a federal plan, and still have 5 years of coverage.
Okay, very good. Well, so consider that. Thank you, Tammy Flanagan. We're going to have you back. Thank you, Lauren Larson. We'll see you guys here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. The show is archived, so you can listen later on today. Have a good week.